AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
Here we go. The reports are out of the way. Heck, the whole month of September is behind us all of a sudden. Energy shortages, skyrocketing prices before the first snowflakes even fall, the RFS, inputs on a tear, the lights are dimming in China, and hey, come to think of it, I haven't heard much about tax policy lately. It's been quiet. Perhaps too quiet. Live from October Wednesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk This Morning. It's our Friday Forever Hole. Panelists Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Paul Niefer join. Right after the news, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson in behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chip's stead. Chip will be back Monday, but in his absence, we have had some humdingers. Just over the last day, I guess Thursday, we had some humdingers, and this morning's free-for-all promises to meet that mark as well. Wiesmeyer was piping in just before the show started. You know, we always kind of check in a little bit. He's dropping bombs already. Like, I had stuff that I thought we should probably talk about all lined up, and now he's got a whole other set of things that I would actually really rather discuss. We'll see if we can draw some of those out of there. And he's also super hot to trot. He says, Davis, ask me about the RFS. And so I said, oh, okay. What about the RFS? Well, you and I, beloved listener, are both going to have to wait. But he apparently has some developments, some new thoughts. Something's happening on the RFS, which, you know, it's only a week late. And actually, we still haven't seen anything come out yet. But it feels like maybe something could. Let's get to the news so that we can get to the discussion. Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Niefer. I've got tons of questions for them. I just can't wait to open the jar. So let's get to the news. For September, the Dow Jones Industrial Average slid 4.3%, while the NASDAQ fell 5.3%. The S&P 500 tumbled 4.8% in September. That's its largest monthly decline since March of 2020. When the coronavirus pandemic spurred a sell-off. Now, despite the slump, the S&P 500 managed to eke out a 0.2% gain for the quarter to notch its sixth consecutive quarter of gains. The NASDAQ and Dow, meanwhile, ended the period lower, marking their first quarterly losses since the first 3 months of 2020. President Biden on Thursday signed a stopgap bill that will keep the government funded through December 3. And at that point, Congress will need to issue another continuing resolution to fund the remainder of the fiscal year. The House and Senate each passed the continuing resolution earlier Thursday. The bill also extended the life of a livestock price reporting bill until December 3. On Thursday night, the Senate took its first procedural step to raise the debt limit, setting up another partisan clash. And so among energy, among RFS, among all of the other things that I said before that I can't even remember now, we should probably talk about raising this debt limit as well. I bet Paul Niefer's got some thoughts. He and Wiesmeyer should be able to stir up a pretty dandy stew on raising the debt limit. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi canceled a vote late Thursday on President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure bill amid deep Democratic infighting. Liberal Democrats had threatened to block it without substantial progress toward passing a $3.5 trillion social policy and climate bill, dubbed the Build Back Better measure. Democrats plan to continue their work today. And if you've been listening earlier this week, Chip just went all in calling this the Green New Deal. Well, we'll get Wiesmeyer's thoughts on that, and perhaps Haney's as well. The $3.5 trillion fiscal package Democrats initially hoped to pass would have been an ambitious expansion of the social safety net, offering regular child allowances, paid sick leave and parental leave, universal preschool and free college. Allegedly, most Americans would pay nothing for these benefits. Led by President Biden, Democrats seek to emulate the comprehensive welfare states common in Western Europe without the high taxes Europeans routinely pay, according to the Wall Street Journal. Relative to other industrialized economies, the U.S. is an outlier on many metrics of government support. And I want to pick Paul Niefer's brain on this because I'm not sure free benefits actually come without a cost to somebody. Pretty sure. Maybe I just don't understand it. Paul's going to help us with that. In an interview with Politico this week in Pennsylvania, U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai said the Biden administration wants to build on the existing tariffs imposed by the Trump administration and confront China for failing to live up to the terms of the Phase One agreement between the two countries. According to the Peterson Institute for International Economics, China's energy purchases at $12.6 billion were only 56% of the seasonal targeted rate. It appears China was too focused on restoring depleted grain supplies and got caught short-bought on energy needs. This as the lights are flickering in China, and it does feel like there's a bit of a panic going on over there over energy. And finally, this is interesting. Researchers at USDA's Ag Research Service said one of their African swine fever virus vaccine candidates, quote, has been shown to prevent and effectively protect both European and Asian bred swine against the current circulating Asian strain of the virus. I've got Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork on the line. Jennifer, what can you tell us about this potential ASF vaccine?
Well, you know, I think it's great news, Davis, to be able to continue to see progress in that area of vaccine development. You know, previous studies have been done under laboratory conditions only, and one of the things that's unique about this is they've been able to team up with a commercial partner in Vietnam to replicate experimental level results to be able to prevent the spread of the virus. So I think that's promising. You know, I think we have to be careful to, oh, we've got it all fixed, it's all solved, because it's definitely maybe far from that, and yet we're so much closer than where we were. I think this is pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And this, I mean, this ASF thing has been a major concern, and we've been fortunate so far. You know, Chip has talked about the situation down at the border with ASF having been detected in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And now we've got Haitians crossing the border with Texas. And boy, a vaccine would sure make everybody feel a lot better. Have you heard of, I mean, there haven't been any cases thus far in the United States, however. Is that still the case?
Correct. There's no reported cases of ASF in a U.S. swine farm to date. And they're doing some very careful monitoring of that, not only in our, you know, commercial herds, but also in our wild born wild pig populations. I was visiting with some USDA researchers yesterday about some of the work that they're doing just from a monitoring and surveillance standpoint. You know, signs, symptoms, things they would be looking for that might be out of the ordinary that could indicate, you know, some kind of a disease like African swine fever. So, you know, I feel like we've done a lot of things to be able to try to prevent and protect our country, but having a vaccine would definitely be a comfort, especially with how important our, you know, pork production is to the U.S.
Speaking of pork production, and we're super short on time, is it time to stock up on bacon?
Oh my gosh, bacon is skyrocketing. I just looked up the prices, and bacon a year ago was about $5.56 a pound, and now it's about $7.10 a pound. So they don't think it's going to come back down anytime soon, so maybe it's not a bad time to buy bacon. I think it always is a good time to buy bacon.
Never a bad time to buy bacon, right? Thanks, Jennifer Scheich from Farm Journal's Pork. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today to AgriTalk. We got the free-for-all coming up. We got Wiesmeyer. We got Haney. We got Niefer. And we've got you, and we're so glad for it. Davis Michelson in for Chip on AgriTalk. Stick around through these words. You're not going to want to miss this one.
Joining me is Dr. Roy Brister, PhD. He is the Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. Dr. Brister, how important is soybean meal in the diet of poultry?
Well, soybean meal is our gold standard that we measure everything against. And what we like about soybean meal is the fact that it's available and it's fairly consistent. When we look at it, it ranges in protein from 45 to 48, but typically within a plant, it's very consistent. So it's a consistent source of protein. The digestibility is excellent. The balance of amino acids is probably better than any other protein source we have out there.
Okay, as a large animal producer, one of your top nutritional needs is amino acids provided by the proteins. Why is it important to look at protein content in a load of soybeans?
Me and my team are always looking at the protein levels in these soybean meals that we get from all these sources and try to help our purchasing group understand what is the best price per unit of protein.
Dr. Brister, are you seeing a range of protein content? And I mean, how big of a deal is 1 or 2 percentage points?
For the last 3 months, proteins range anywhere from a 45.5 to about a 48% protein. If you just were looking at buying a ton of soybean meal, and you could buy a ton of 45% protein soybean meal or a ton of 48% protein, at 3%, that's 60 pounds of protein. You know, and a lot of times we pay for it based on a ton, but if you put that on a per unit of protein basis and you've got to haul 2,000 pounds, I'd rather haul 2,000 pounds of 48% than 2,000 pounds of 45%, just from a sustainability. And I'd have to haul a lot more of the 45. So when you start looking at costs, those small percentages add up.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Brister. That is Dr. Roy Brister, Director of Nutrition at Tyson Foods. For more information on how U.S. soybeans provide protein for animal agriculture, visit soymeal.org. Brought to you by the Soy Checkoff.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Geez, I hope we run out of things to talk about, because I want to bring in Big Apple Joe at some point to just hear his thoughts on the whole James Bond thing. But there's no time for that now. Let's start with Pro Farmer Washington policy analyst and OG Jim Wiesmeyer. Welcome to the free-for-all this morning, buddy. How's it going?
Lots of news and potential news going on.
Excellent tease. Sean Haney from the land up yonder, the Alberta Breeze himself. Welcome to the show, buddy.
It's great to be back. Looking forward to it.
And Paul Niefer joins us as well. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm sure, just like Jim, there's going to be plenty to talk about today, or what didn't happen yesterday.
Absolutely. Ooh, another good tease. Man, you're killing me. This is great. Jim, we started, you and I started our conversation before the show even began with you saying, ask me about the RFS. So let's shine a light on what's new in the RFS. What have you got for us?
Well, some exclusive breaking news is that this morning, there's three virtual meetings being held with EPA Administrator Michael Regan. The RFA group met with him at 10:30, again, virtually. NFU had an 11 a.m. meeting. And as we speak, I've been told Growth Energy is having a virtual meeting. Now, what this means, we're not quite sure, but I remember being called into a principal's office, and it wasn't good news. So we'll have to see. But I think this does raise the odds that we're getting very close to finally an RFS announcement.
Ooh. So, I mean, we saw the leaked email, the whatever it was, the leak was at a week and a half ago now. And then that word was spread that was spurious, but still attitudes remain pretty negative on what this report is going to read.
Yeah, I think some of the numbers could change from that leaked memo, from what I'm hearing, especially the ones that didn't make sense to me was biodiesel, renewable diesel. They just did not make sense to me. They were actually too high, so we're going to have to see. And very powerful Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, Democrat, weighed in with Gina McCarthy, I've been told this week about that, saying if this is the case, you know, these numbers, then Biden has reneged on his pledge on that 15 billion gallon commitment when he ran for president. So we've got some big players involved here.
And I do feel like the farm sector would be rightly upset if that's the case.
Yes.
Paul, you made a thinly veiled allusion to something that happened yesterday. Do you want to tell us what you're talking about?
Well, you know, we thought there was a remote chance that the infrastructure bill would get through, and obviously that didn't happen. It does create some issues for our farmers, because in that bill, there's a provision that disallows the employee retention credit, which for a lot of our farmers is a big credit, starting in the fourth quarter. Well, if the bill hasn't passed and the farmers are relying on the current rules and they're taking advantage of that credit, and then the bill passes, is it going to be retroactive? You know, this is going to be a little bit of a mess. You know, that's the problem when you have the Democrats that can't get their act together and get something passed timely. We're going to have sort of what I call the law of unintended consequences here.
Mm. Hey, well, go ahead, Sean.
David, so I was just going to ask Jim. Jim, what do you think the Vegas odds are right now on Pelosi pulling a rabbit out of her hat and putting this whole thing together here today?
I'm not going to bet against Pelosi. I think she will pull maybe a rabbit with one ear out of the hat, okay? but the key, as I wrote this morning, is she's big on framework agreements, but her progressives, the very liberal people in her caucus, wants more than just a framework. They want a written commitment by at least the two centrists, Manchin and Sinema, that they're going to sign off on whatever level. I'm hearing between $1.5 trillion and $2.1 trillion. So we'll have to see, but I'm not going to bet against Pelosi. I think we'll eventually have what they call the BBB Build Back Better plan.
Now,
yeah, you know, I was going to say there was a good commentary in the journal this morning talking about how the progressives are a bit disillusioned in the fact that they're trying to push through like Bernie Sanders kind of legislation in a Biden mandate. And I think Manchin yesterday really spoke for how a lot of people in America sort of feel, to be honest with you, in regards to entitlement versus rewards. And of course, you have to have a balance, in my opinion. You can't have one all or the other, but it just seems like the progressives in this case really, really want to move it towards the entitlement side as opposed to rewards.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Paul, that's what they want.
Paul, you had a thought.
Yeah, Jim, I was just curious. Why don't the Republicans in the House just get together and vote the infrastructure bill through? And then that way that takes all of the ammunition that the progressives have on this, the $3.5 trillion, just takes all their ammunition away. Because I think, you know, the Senate Republicans, they wanted it. I would think there's certainly at least 50 or 60 Republicans in the House that wouldn't mind doing that. Why hasn't that really been discussed among themselves?
Well, you know, I don't think either political party leader in the House wants that right now. Pelosi wants the, Democrats to clear this thing. And McCarthy on the Republican side in the House does not want any of his Republicans to vote for the bipartisan agreement until it's proven on the floor that they have the 218 votes. So, yes, that's all politics, but that's the way it is.
Well, now, and as I understand it, and tell me if I'm wrong, but, I mean, Pelosi was cutting a super hard line on connecting those two bills together. Is that still the case? But it almost feels like there may be a potential for some cracks there. Is a seam forming between the two bills?
I think the linkage is clearly there. It's a facade to think otherwise because of the progressives. They will not vote, at least a lot of them, enough of them, will not vote for the BIF, as we call it, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, until they get their type of assurances from the centrist in the Senate. That they will go along with whatever is the final numbers and the features of the Build Back Better plan.
It's hilarious that the acronym is BIF. Like they really, really biffed it on this one.
Yeah. I just think of Back to the Future when I hear that.
I do too.
Yeah. And Biff wasn't the brightest bulb in Back to the Future. That's for sure. So.
Not at all. Not at all. And not one that you could trust either. I mean, if you saw Back to the Future 2, there's cause for concern.
Hey, but Davis, it's like this infrastructure bill has been driven into the manure truck, just like they did on Back to the Future.
But we did have some good news today. We avoided the partial government shutdown at least through December the 3rd, but that bill includes $10 billion in ag disaster aid, an extended ag disaster aid, also including livestock producers, and a short-term extension of the mandatory livestock price reporting. So there is positive news.
So that's your cobbled up skateboard with the roller skate wheels under the piece of plywood, in other words. Let's just keep this Back to the Future thing going, shall we? Paul, I want to talk to you about some tax policy. I said in the intro it feels a little quiet on tax policy, perhaps a little too quiet. What are we missing?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've got this false sense of security on the transfer tax or the elimination of step-up in bases because the House bill didn't have either of those provisions, you know, didn't really make any changes there. I keep hearing over on the Senate side, certainly Biden has signed off on the billionaire mark-to-market, but I continue to hear a lot of rumblings that on the Senate side. What I'm starting to hear a little bit of, this was actually, I think, in the Wall Street Journal, too, on the opinion side, maybe it was another one, but doesn't matter, that farmers will have two options. Now, I'm not going to say this is going to happen, but the two options are they can either elect to not have step up, or they can elect to pay the transfer tax, but you'll get to pay it over a 10 or 15 year period. Now, there will be certainly some exemptions, but if it's the $1 million exemption, for a lot of ag, that's almost worthless. If it's a $5 or $25 million exemption, then that would probably be a whole lot better. But, you know, just because that the House version had no changes on the step up, I think ag's got to continue to be very vigilant that it's still on the table for some type of major change to step up, and it would not be good for ag.
Well, and Jim, we've seen Joe Manchin as sort of a spoiler figure here. Is this sort of all hinging on how he falls on the issue?
And who's that, Manchin?
Manchin, yeah.
Well, and Sinema. Sinema is more the tax area, as far as I'm concerned. And she wants that climate change provisions in that bill.
Oh, boy.
So, all right. There are a lot of moving parts right now. A lot of moving parts. I just hope that they really strike all those onerous tax provisions for the ag.
All right, we'll be back right after this on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, little strength in the corn market, but ongoing pressure in wake of yesterday's reports on soybeans.
Yeah, I'll start with beans. You know, the September 1 stocks just came in well above what the trade expected and put heavy pressure on the market yesterday. Quite honestly, I'm surprised, a little surprised it wasn't even heavier selling yesterday. But we are seeing follow through today. But, you know, the June low held in November futures on that test, and we have worked off those lows at the moment, but still bears are controlling price action here mid-morning. The corn market, you mentioned that, it's trading to the upside, but largely the reason it's trading to the upside is wheat is just exploding higher. So wheat had bullish news yesterday. September 1 stocks came in lower than expected, largely because the crop estimate was cut more than anticipated, and so that pulled September 1 stocks down and really fueling price strength, and the global supply story, shrinking supplies around the world continues there. And like I said, that's spilling over to the corn market this morning.
Cattle market's acting kind of weird. Corn up, cattle up too.
Yeah, feeder cattle, they've divorced from the corn market, and that's unusual, like you mentioned, for this week in particular. So we're trading with strong gains in feeder cattle. Despite the strength in the corn market this morning, that's helping the live cattle futures. Now, both those markets had poor technical performances yesterday, especially the feeder cattle. Looked like a downside breakout on the charts, but rebounding today. And then the hog market, it's trading with a mixed tone here at mid-morning with the October contract higher and December a little bit weaker.
That's Brian Grady from Pro Farmer on Markets Now.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk. Boy, howdy, do we ever. Why don't you make like a tree?
Get out of here.
Thanks, Biff. Thanks, Biff. Davis Michelson here with you on your radio dial or preferred digital device. I'm so glad that you've decided to tune in and join us for this morning's Friday for Reefer Ho. Jim Wiesmeyer, Sean Haney, and Paul Niefer join us today. Fellas, Paul, I might throw this one to you first here. I saw a story out of Barron's about Goldman Sachs, the latest bank to cut its China growth forecast. For Q3, its growth forecast is zero GDP growth for China. How concerning is this? Is this something you're watching?
Well, we already know we have supply chain issues, you know, out on the West Coast. You know, what is there, 50, 100 ships outside of LA that can't even get in to drop off their containers? You know, the containers are being shipped back to China as fast as they can. So a lot of the fruits and vegetables and hay that our growers here on the West Coast want to get shipped over there, can't get it shipped over. You know, we already know that they're trying to shut down, or not shut down, but curtail the power use. So that's shutting off some of their factories, certainly right. Northeastern China. Yeah, it's an issue. Now, is it a major issue or is it a temporary issue? It's probably more temporary, but you know, these things all tend to compound on top of each other. So it'll be interesting to see whether this is strictly, you know, sort of this third quarter issue or mm-hmm. in the fourth quarter rebound, or if it goes into 2022.
Okay. Sean, I want to ask you a little bit. We're hearing about, you know, Europe is freaking out over natural gas prices, energy prices, basically everywhere. Energy is becoming a problem. What's it look like up there in Canada? Because as I understand it, it gets a little chilly up there. Starting about this time of year,
just a tad. Just
I have
a
that in
bit.
My notes. Like, yeah,
we sometimes worry about it. You know, it's in July. We're like, yeah, this is a great place to live. And then January hits.
Right.
Yeah, energy prices are always a concern, especially in this kind of inflationary market, for sure. Canada, of course, it's a big bone of frustration because, you know, we like to be an energy exporter, and getting things like pipelines built has been a massive challenge lately, of course. Thank you, President Biden, and the Keystone shutdown. But yeah, energy prices very much on people's radar here. Absolutely, Dave. I think they are around, like in the G7 countries altogether. We're just continuing to see escalation.
Now, I had a – Jim, go ahead.
But, you know, China goofed up on phase one.
Yes.
Because they
for
this year they purchased 92% of their seasonal targeted rate for ag products, but on the energy products it's only 56%, or $12.6 billion, of that targeted rate. So they're usually good traders, but they missed this one, Ron.
And it sounds like you called me Ron. That's awesome.
Oh, sorry.
I'm going to tell him that. I'm going to tell him that. That's my dad. That's my dad. I lost my train of thought there.
My father like son.
Well, I got my mother's good looks. So, you know, I guess I got it all. I was going to go somewhere. I completely lost it. Okay. How about this? If power generation becomes a prolonged problem, I mean, we've had Ford talking about, you know, transitioning some of their plants over to making electric F-150s, you know, their most popular pickup trucks. If power generation becomes a problem and persists, what happens to the whole electric vehicle conversation? I feel like nobody's talking about this.
Well, anyone? And you know, yeah. And then is well, and as you tend to go to more and more solar and more wind power, that's not the most reliable source of energy for running power plants. You know, it's natural gas, and you know, and if we are using that natural gas to heat homes in the Northeast and is not available to power the grid, yes, there's an issue. And I'm sort of curious why Biden is wanting OPEC to increase production when yes. Biden really, if he's truly believing in climate change, that climate change needs to be accelerated, he should be saying, hey, we want to cut back on power so that then there's even more of an incentive to have solar and wind power and so on. So I think it's definitely all politics. We know that, but it seems like he'd be touting for that.
Mm-hmm. And this is also going to return the power to OPEC, you know, Davis.
Yes. Yes.
In the months ahead, I think you're going to see continued rising energy prices, and it's going to be a major, major issue during the winter.
Well, specifically, you have to pay it. Yeah. Go ahead. No. I was going to throw in the whole Russia thing. That scares the heck out of me. The idea that Russia would have more, you know, the hand on the switch on the natural gas supply coming into Europe. That's not a good setup, right?
Yep, and it's got, of course, you know, Davis, it's got fertilizer price implications. It already has, and that could lead to some fewer than expected corn acres next year.
I wondered about that, too. Sean, you were going to pipe in with something there. You had something on your mind.
Well, I was just going to say on the electric vehicle, like we talked about this before, is that the shift is happening. It likely is going to happen. I'm not going to bet against the movement towards electric vehicles, but it's the rate at which we get there. And the fact that the infrastructure has to be in place, the power generation, obviously the charging stations are a thing, and we just continue to be just skipping over all these steps as if they're all just going to magically appear, and really not thinking it through at times. And you know, I saw some of Bernie Sanders' comments yesterday where it's like, you know, if we don't do something, the world's going to basically explode in 4 years.
Right.
And it just sort of wears on you in terms of just we're setting ourselves up for a major, major issue when it comes to this transition if we try to do too fast.
Well, you know, one of Manchin's requirements on signing off on the Build Back Better is to not end the subsidies to the crude industry. So I would watch that as well.
Mm-hmm. It feels like a similar setup to ethanol to where, okay, if you build it, they will come. But who wants to put in the blender pumps if the RFS isn't going to be supported, if there are all of these questions still floating around up in the air? It feels like the same argument on electric vehicles.
It's fair.
Well, and if you build all these charging stations, you probably don't have enough grid capacity to even charge them. You know, so, you know, it's all interrelated.
Yep. Jim, circle me back to Catherine Tai's comments on keeping the tariffs alive against China in light of their falling short of phase one commitments.
Yeah, she told Politico that she wants to build on existing tariffs and confront China for failing to live up to the terms of the phase one agreement. And she's going to give a pretty major speech Monday at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And supposedly the topic is on the U.S. trade agenda with China. So for those wanting to see a cessation of those tariffs, no, she wants to build on them, Davis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sean, lots of warm fuzzies between Canada and China right now. You got your guys back. You sent the Huawei chick back over to China. It must feel good.
It's great to see the two Michaels back home, of course.
For sure.
The relationship continues to be very frosty, and it could get really frostier soon because Canada, well, actually the Prime Minister in his first address since the election there on September 20th, had indicated that Canada is going to make its decision on Huawei very shortly, an announcement coming soon. So there's no real odds on which direction Canada is going, but I'm sure the US, Australia, the UK really, really insisting and putting pressure on Canada to make the right decision in regards to pushing back against Huawei.
Clarify that. What would that look like if they were to push back against Huawei? Because they've let the executive go. She's out of the country, correct?
Well, it has to do with the networking infrastructure. And so as Canada pushes towards 5G networks across the country, are they going to allow the Huawei technology to be the basis of that infrastructure, even though by many analysts' statements, it's the best in the world? And do they have to go a different way with companies like Ericsson, for example? So that's where the pressure point is. Other countries have made the decision. Canada is not as of yet because of the hostage-taking situation, very mm-hmm. rarely so.
Well, the United States has certainly taken advantage, at least on beef exports, of the row between Australia and China on the trade front there. We've seen beef exports rise pretty sharply. Any thoughts on whether or not that will continue as pork prices head lower in China?
Well, I think we should expect things to continue. It's been a very strong. We need them to continue. We've got a lot of cattle to move through between Canada and the U.S. So I think everyone's definitely hoping for that. We need it to happen. There's obviously domestic consumption when it comes to the demand that we focus on, but that. The export market to Japan and China, Vietnam, those are very, very important markets for North American beef.
This, as it's very, very dry across much of cattle country in the U.S., what's the status of cattle country up there in Canada? Still dry? What's it look like?
Absolutely same situation. Just like as if you were ranching in Montana, it's the same thing in Saskatchewan and Alberta West, where people having to make decisions. Do I have enough feed? How long can I hold on to these calves? What am I going to do with my replacement heifers? Do I need to get them fed somewhere else through the winter so I can maintain my cow herd? What do I do with the cows that I have? It's the same sort of decision making going on, and it has put people in ranching community under immense stress because the decision made on those cows, it's like a 2-3 year impact, right, in regards to revenue and the future of their ranch.
Very good. Well, we've got one segment left with our panelists, Wiesmeyer, Haney, and Niefer. I think what we're going to do is just go lightning round. Fellas, I want each of you to think of the most important thing on your mind right now, and we'll run those down, discuss, because we're almost out of time, and there's so much more to talk about. So hone your ideas in this break, and you, beloved listener, please do come back on the other side. We'll see you there on AgriTalk.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Your pal, Davis Michelson, behind the big green leafy microphone of AgriTalk in Chip's stead. He'll be back Monday. In the meantime, we've got a free-for-all going, and we are long on ideas and topics, short on time. So we, as promised, are going to go lightning round. Paul Niefer, let me throw it to you first. What's the biggest thing, if you could talk about just one thing, what would it be, and go?
Well, the biggest thing for me is the fact that we think we're in a lull here with no major tax increases for farmers. And I think that's a mistaken concept. I think we're definitely facing some major tax increases, and we just got to be vigilant to let our representatives know that we don't want it.
So is it the kind of thing that we'll sort of know about once it's already a done deal? Or, are they keeping it quiet on purpose, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, let's go back to 2017. A lot of the details, including the grain glitch fix on 199A, we didn't know about it until the day it came out. So,
language. Yes, you need the language, right, Paul? We need the language.
Without the language, nothing. It doesn't mean anything without the language.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Very good. Jim, throw us your thoughts quick.
OnePlus. I've got to lose 10 pounds in 3 months because they're building a new Popeyes 2 blocks from my house.
Wait a second. You're going to lose 10 pounds so you can gain it all back, right? Is that the trick?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not silly. But the biggest one, and this may surprise people, I'm worried about the debt limit debate because the Republicans and Democrats are at loggerheads. The Democrats do not want to put it as part of budget reconciliation because it appears that if you put it in budget reconciliation, you have to have a specific number. And in this case, it would be $35 trillion. So they're at loggerheads, and I'm worried.
Paul, you're a You're a tax guy and numbers fella, a bean counter by trade. What are your thoughts on raising the debt limit?
Well, I think they're going to have to, like Jim says, they don't want to put a number on there because then it sort of jumps out at everybody. Well, actually, they had another bill. I thought even in the infrastructure bill, they were talking about that they're going to allow the debt limit to go up to about $32 trillion over a 10-year period. So it's going to come. Some people are saying, let's just get rid of the debt limit because it's artificial anyway. We know we're going to borrow money, so why do we have a debt limit? So, yeah, I just don't know.
That seems fiscally irresponsible not to have some sort of limit on it. Does that not occur to anyone?
Well,
it makes too much sense. Yeah.
Well, because I have
a problem with the.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, on our credit card, we have a limit. But we call the bank and say, hey, can you increase the limit? And that's what the Congress is doing every time that they exceed the limit. They just call themselves, hey, let's increase the limit. So
yeah. I wonder if Bill Gates has a limit,
but it means nothing.
Yeah, I don't think Bill Gates has a limit on his credit card. Do you? The VIPers?
See,
no.
I went and ironed and ironed and ironed my best shirt to go into the bank, and they still wouldn't raise my credit limit. I couldn't believe it. All that steam for nothing. Sean Haney from up north.
I think it was that. I was going to say it was probably that hole that you put in the shirt from too much ironing is the reason you didn't get the limit.
Well, if they would raise it, I could get a new shirt. And that's just the thing, you know? It's a catch-22. Sean Haney, your thoughts from the great land up north. What's the biggest thing on your mind at the moment?
I think it's input prices, Davis. And it's you know, I think things have really flipped here in terms of, like, 2 weeks ago, I was thinking, like, I was so focused on prices. How high could prices go for some of these products? And I think now it's become more about supply and what do I need to do as a farmer to make sure that I have the inputs from a fertilizer perspective that I need for spring. And that has become very, very critical. And I agree with the Josh Linville of StoneX of the world, saying, talk to your retailer. You know, usually we keep our cards really close to our vest. I think you need to think of your farm as like an auto plant. Making sure you have the components, and you don't want to be like some of these car manufacturers that have a vehicle parked outside in a parking lot because they can't get a $1 chip. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how you have to think about your fertilizer supply for this upcoming year. You need to get to work on it, and do not be an ostrich and stick your head in the sand and assume it's going to be there in the spring when you need it.
Paul, you're out in farm country. Your thoughts? Yeah.
Well, and I actually am a farmer now. I have acreage in Iowa and Missouri and Washington. And for the first time ever, I took advantage of the margin insurance program for corn and beans because I'm able to lock in, 506 on corn, 1256 on beans, and lock in my input. So I have a margin there. So if input prices continue to go up and or corn and bean prices go down, I'm at least insured that, I'm going to be okay. So I think that's something that, now the problem is it expired yesterday. So, it's too late to sign up for it. But, inputs are definitely a big deal.
Jim, if inputs continue to be a big deal, can we see a cut to corn acreage?
I think you could, because they could go up rather significantly. Like, no, it depends on prior purchases when farmers locked them in. But this thing is not going to go away anytime soon. You can just see it building. It's a logistical problem and it's a supply problem. So,
And Linville was talking, Sean, you brought up Josh Linville from StoneX. I had a great talk with him. Gosh, was that just yesterday morning? It seems like a long time ago, but he was talking about working with a rough number around 91 million acres. But Jim, from what you're saying, it feels like it could fall from that. I'm not going to ask for a number. Would you say it could fall significantly from that?
I don't think significantly, because, a corn grower is a corn grower to me. But
they
it
do
could
love
fall.
To grow corn. Yeah, absolutely.
But it may be forced to go lower because of the lack of supply, because guys don't have a choice.
Boy, I like that you're bringing out that supply crunch potential there. Paul Niefer, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Appreciate you, sir.
You're welcome.
Sean Haney, enjoy Canada. We appreciate you being on as well.
All the best, everybody. Have a great weekend.
And Jim Wiesmeyer, of course, out in D.C. Jim, keep in touch, brother. Keep us up to date.
Sure.
This afternoon, we've got John Payne from StoneX for a conversation on AgriTalk. Your pal, Davis Michelson, thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. We appreciate you. Come on back at 2 p.m. Central Time.